Welcome to Don't Trust the Mirror, My Secret Life with an Eating Disorder, with psychoanalyst Maureen Kritzer-Lang, the queen of self-esteem. Maureen shares her personal journey of her struggles with an eating disorder and how that changed her life. Listen as Maureen shares her pain, her stories, and her triumphs. Today, as a psychoanalyst, her mission is to help as many women as possible overcome their challenges. Now, My Secret Life with an Eating Disorder.
Hi, I'm Maureen Kritzer-Lang, the queen of self-esteem. Welcome to my podcast, My Secret Life with an Eating Disorder. I have a guest today who I cannot wait to have a conversation with. I've recently gotten to know her, and I feel like she has so much to share about what keeps her positive and grounded in a anxious, overwhelming, and very stressful world. Welcome, Kiana Kogut.
Thanks, Marie.
I am really glad you're here. I know you and I have just recently gotten to know each other, and I asked you to be on my podcast because I really felt like after talking to you, you had so much to offer my listeners in terms of just navigating a stressful life as a young adult and making this transition from college to, you know, living with family to being on your own. And, you know, if you could share some of the struggles that you have dealt with and how you deal with them. And I was very impressed with just how you navigate and manage things. So I thought that you could just be an inspiration and offer a lot of hope and tips and things that my listeners will relate to and really be able to just to relate to in terms of how you manage your life. So I wonder if you could share a little bit about yourselves now.
No, of course. Definitely been a wild ride going from just college and then straight out of it, finding out that we had to deal with a pandemic and restarting my career based off of that, trying to find ways to deal with everyday struggles and anxieties that I know so many people in my generation face. And right now, you know, I have my, I'm able to utilize like my right brain on my day job where I work as an account management analyst, a little bit of project management work, to where I get to still enjoy things on a creative side where I actually got my degree in fashion design and moving towards still trying to find other outlets for that, like illustration, embroidery, and just any other interests that I have, whether it be like real estate or with animals or just trying to stay active and keeping my body as healthy as it possibly can be.
It's a lot to manage and navigate. And I also know we can't really see him right now, but your little kitty is there too with you.
Oh yeah, she's running around, always just looking for attention, except right now, of course.
Of course. So what does keep you grounded and mindful in your world?
I think it definitely depends on the situation and what I'm able to do about it in the moment. For the most part, especially if it's something work related or if I'm in a position where I can't move myself out of the situation, it's a lot of just trying to stop the racing thoughts for a moment and focusing.
Right. And that can be really hard because they just get away from us, I know.
Oh, it's probably the hardest part to just not let you fall down the rabbit hole. That's my favorite place to go.
I think you're not alone with that at all.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can't imagine how bad it's for other people, too. I already know that. I think I've gotten a pretty good handle on it at the moment through, you know, years of trying to figure out what works best for me. But definitely trying to think about it from a logical standpoint and just trying to put aside the emotional aspect until that can like cool down and I can actually assess, okay, what can I do right now?
Well, I always think about when life kind of hits us unexpectedly or in a bit of an anxious moment that we don't always have to react, but we can respond. And there's a difference between reacting to something, which is our first impulsive go-to, to actually taking a breath and responding. But it's a practice. It can be really hard.
No, that's a huge thing. And actually, one of the big things I do is taking just a quick deep breath and thinking, okay, I'm upset by this, or this is kind of freaking me out, but we're going to put that to the side and we're going to see what can I do to actually fix the situation, or at least if it's a person, hey, I can't give you a full answer right now.
I'll think about it. It's always a good answer.
It's definitely better than shutting down.
Yes. It gives you that time to think.
Oh, yes. Or blowing up, which...
Yes, that too. That too. Can you share a little bit about your transition and what it was like going from college to living on your own independently and some of the challenges that you've had?
Oh, yeah. I mean, going from college to a full-fledged adult, I mean, I'll be honest, being 26, I feel like I'm only a six-year-old in college, or in adult years.
Yeah, I would imagine sometimes. The adulting is hard.
Yeah, and honestly, like, the biggest thing that's always been a struggle for me is just all of the day-to-day tasks and just overall responsibilities that you don't hear anything about while you're in school. Even when I took, like, independent living in schools, and they don't touch on anything.
What is that? What was that course?
We learned how to cook and sew.
Seriously?
Yeah, when I took that course, I thought at least maybe I'll learn how to do a budget. No.
A checkbook, maybe.
No, I had to ask my parents, like, how do I have a cashier job now at this point at 16. I'm like, how do I be smart with my money?
Right. And learn to budget.
Exactly. So that's, you know, a huge thing, just finances, finding out that I have to be my own medical advocate. Was very stressful, knowing that if I think anything's wrong, you have to really push to get help on doctors, to not even mention how stressful it is trying to figure out your insurance policy. Like, I mean, these are all things that I never had to deal or worry about, also being relatively healthy.
Right. And it's all these everyday tasks that when you're living with your parents or in college, that you really don't have to think about. Even things like doing your own grocery shopping, cooking, which I guess they sort of tried to prepare you for, and the budgeting, and things like putting gas in your car, managing your health insurance, and also working in a full-time job.
I cannot remember the last time I've been bored. Well, we can say that. I've always had something that I need to do off of the laundry list, to make sure, like you said, I have gas in my car, I have groceries, you know, making sure you pay everything on time, even with auto pay, because, again, technology messes up. You always feel like you're juggling something, and that was not something I felt fully prepared for after college, even though you do juggle a lot in college. It's very different things, and the stakes are a lot different.
Right. And especially you're living on your own. I mean, sometimes when you have roommates, you can kind of juggle a little bit, but even on your own, and even taking care of your cat, that is a huge responsibility as well.
The transition from a dog to a cat, I almost felt like I was forgetting to do stuff half the time, because I was like, I have a toddler going to, like, basically having, like, a teenager.
Right. And making sure they go to the bed, food, taking care of all those things is also on the to-do list.
The vacuuming alone is a feat.
Yes, with the cat hair. Right, keeping your place clean.
Yeah, which is, you know, a big thing that's also good just for my, you know, mental state, is making sure my environment is not a complete tornado has gone through it.
I don't know if you can think of a moment or, like, a particular instance where you felt overwhelmed with all these things that you had to do, and just how you got through that.
Thinking about that, I mean, I still try to be sociable, so I do plan things with my friends. having a full-time job. And at this point, I had just gotten a promotion. So I was given more work. I had a trip coming up. I knew that I had to find someone to watch my dog. And I'm just like, I'm just trying to live my life right now. And there's like 40 things on a to-do list for me to just go spend time with my friends. So definitely I'm a big to-do list person. So when I feel overwhelmed and can't be excited about something fun that I'm supposed to, you know, be excited about, that's where I will just try to break up things as much as possible and figure out, okay, everything's fine. I have time to do everything, and just start with a one thing at a time rather than looking at the big picture of I have a million things to do and very little time.
Well, and sometimes breaking it down to even like, what is the simplest thing that I can do right now? The easiest thing.
Oh, yeah.
So you could start to tackle it a little by little.
Yeah, definitely. The smaller the pieces are, the more likely I'm able to do them and feel better about it to then give me momentum to do, okay, now I got to do the big thing.
I was listening to something recently and it was on a meditation, and she was talking about how sometimes when we feel really overwhelmed and anxious, to just like second by second, moment by moment, is like, I'm okay at this moment. I'm okay at this moment. The next moment, I'm okay. So to just sort of like try to breathe and just take it, like you said, a step at a time and a moment at a time when things just feel like our world is crashing down.
Yeah, I think we get very obsessed with the big picture or like the end goal and not think about, okay, well, to get to the top of the stairs, I have to go up these little stairs first in order to get there. And that used to be like a, and it kind of is sometimes, it's, you know, another problem that I constantly face and remind myself, like, I don't have to take a huge leap. I can take little steps to get there.
I think that's really important and really good to share, because again, you're not alone in this. And I think, I know so many people I see struggle with this, and I think everybody in our own ways struggles with it.
I mean, especially I feel like with technology, like I definitely didn't grow up with a ton of technology. I didn't have a cell phone until I was in maybe eighth grade. But, you know, having all of that available to you, you're expected to know more. You're expected to respond faster. You're expected to be able to do everything. And if people don't hear with you within 12 hours, it's like, well, why don't you know how to do this thing? And why didn't you respond? I'm like, I'm sorry, I was living life.
Right, right. That everything has to be so immediate. And I think a couple things that you mentioned that we didn't necessarily put on this list of overwhelming things is technology, which you just mentioned, spending time, so much time, such another rabbit hole we can go down, which is scrolling on our phones and technology. And also just balancing a social life.
That is very stressful. I've definitely have gone into like hermit mode before, especially when I've been traveling or work has been, I have busy seasons at work. So during those times, like, okay, we have to hunker down and get stuff done. Or, you know, I was moving between states during the pandemic. Very few people heard from me because I was having to focus and get everything done so I could, you know, move and just still work and do my life. It's a lot to juggle.
It is. And also during COVID, it was extraordinarily challenging because of the way the world was functioning.
Like in a snail's pace.
Yeah. Yeah. And we had to navigate all kinds of new ways of dealing with things.
I had to pivot very, very quickly. I was living across the river from New York City, had a roommate, was trying to, you know, got laid off trying to figure out like my fashion design career I had to pivot completely because the entire city shut down.
Yes. It was really hard. Really, really hard. How has your self-esteem changed over the years? And I also wanted to check in with you too about how you deal with food, body image, weight, those kinds of things, and what challenges those have for you.
So my body image is definitely something I have struggled with for a long time. My relationship with food is not the best. It's constantly a work in progress, kind of like going to the gym. If I don't keep tabs on it, it definitely can, again, fall down the rabbit hole very quickly. I'll fall off the bandwagon. But I definitely think that my body image has gotten a lot better throughout the years, especially being out of school. That's helped a lot. I think the biggest thing is I just try to do things that make me happy while also trying to think of, okay, is this like the healthiest decision for me? And if it's not, why am I doing it? Is it for the little bit of moderation so I'm not completely depriving myself? Or is this an emotional attachment issue that I'm having here? So that's why I like try to think about before I indulge, still trying to indulge in some things.
That's very insightful. And those are really good questions to ask yourself. How did you come to that point that you could actually think of those questions for yourself?
A lot of therapy and a lot of meditation.
Okay, so those are some strategies that you've used.
I've been in and out of therapy for probably since I was like maybe 6 or 8 years old, and trying to find, I'm not great at meditation. It's mostly guided, or if I go to the gym, it's a very nice way for me to just shut my brain off. But thinking, I just constantly ask myself why, because I do a lot of things and think a lot of things that don't make sense. And I keep trying to ask myself, okay, well, why do I want to do this? Why is that important to me? How is that going to make me feel? And how is it going to make me feel after? So to help me make a better decision, at least.
No, those are excellent ways to try to shift your thinking. Because what I hear you saying is that you really have a curiosity about why you do things. So it's that curiosity that really leads you to ask yourself those questions and to know that everything is a practice and a work in progress. And even to think about meditation, it's something that's a practice. Like life is a practice in many ways, that somehow we feel like we get it right sometimes, sometimes not quite the way we want it. And it's about resetting, regrounding ourselves, coming back to our breath with things. So it's always that. You know, I always think of the ocean, because I love the ocean, just as this metaphor for just kind of how do we ride that wave? And what do we do when we get tossed with it? How we feel about ourselves changes second by second, even. And our relationship with food and our bodies isn't linear and doesn't stay the same, depending on how we're feeling.
Yeah, it's... That's also something that's been kind of a struggle for me too, is knowing that change is always going to happen. So I used to not really like change, but then kind of started to shift my focus a little bit more, realizing, well, that means the negative stuff is going to change too. And I don't have to be unhappy. I don't have to be feeling guilty. I don't have to continuously feel this way. And of course, it's, again, a work in progress too. The end goal is always going to be moving.
Yes, it is always moving, and change is a constant and change is inevitable. The only thing that is constant is change, really, whether we like it or not.
Yep, and that was a hard fact for me to learn.
Absolutely. It is a really hard fact to learn. Also, even with food, I was wondering if you could share a little bit more just some of the struggles and some of the ways that you try to reset with that, and also those resetting with your body and how you feel about that. How do you do that?
Oh, my relationship with food. So
question.
Yeah, I mean, I've gone through a lot of changes with my body. I've lost a lot of weight, like close to 100 pounds twice. Oh. I do think I'm pretty adaptable and that I can do almost anything, like even considering with my career from fashion design to like account management, I feel like I'm adaptable and can be able to change. But with food, I would get really, really good into something. And I even was able to like deprive myself from things and everything would be good. But then, you know, something whether it be brain chemistry or some other big change in my life, it would make me go to food as a comfort. And that's definitely something I still always struggle with. It could be out of boredom. It could be, you know, I'm not feeling good about myself right now. So what does it matter if I eat, you know, a gallon of ice cream or 12 Twinkies? It doesn't matter. But I think the biggest thing is I just want to know that I'm doing myself justice and thinking, okay, if I saw like my best friend or a family member eating like that, like I should intervene. I should do something, be like, hey, are you okay? Because it's fine to have, you know, a little bit of that. But if you're going to gorge yourself to the point where you're going to feel guilty and sick and all of these other things, that's not for their best health. That's not good for their mind. That's not good for anything. So that's something I try to think about in resetting and finding ways to avoid me getting to that point.
Well, and having some compassion for yourself and forgiveness and being able to understand, and it sounds like you really work on this, to understand what is it that made me feel like the food was a comfort. And, you know, to ask yourself, how am I going to feel afterwards? But to know that it's hard and it could be a struggle. And again, finding that compassion, because I think it's so easy to beat ourselves up about it and to get angry and critical. And, you know, as I have talked about, like that relentless critical voice and just being so mean to ourselves about it.
Yeah, I'm my own worst critic.
Right, that critical voice. And how do we shift that for ourselves?
That's also a huge hurdle. I've learned that thinking of myself in a third person helps.
You say a little bit more about that?
Yeah. Trying to think of myself as a third person, that, okay, I'm not talking to myself right now. I'm talking to a friend, a family member, or even just, or it could be a random person I would be way nicer to than to myself. So that's something that I try to think, okay, this person needs help. What would you do to help them? Advice, what would be the best course for them to take? And then to not feel guilty for the fact, okay, they slipped up a little bit here. You're all human. Things go on in life. It's okay. And just trying to remember that you're a person, you're going to make mistakes. You deserve some grace to get back up.
Right. You're human. And you step outside of yourself, which again, I think is a wonderful technique that you use to help you find that compassion.
It's hard to do sometimes. I mean, especially when you have like, and I can't speak for everybody, but I know I can get like a lot of regret or guilt on things that I do. I'm like, oh man, I really wish I didn't eat that. Or, oh, I really wish I didn't say that or something else. But it's, you know, you have to just try to learn from your mistakes and be like, it's okay. Learn from what you did and figure out why you did what you did to not do it again.
That's really good. Good advice, good thoughts to pass on to people. I wanted to shift a bit, Kiana, and ask you about your middle school, high school years. I know that you were bullied in school. And that's a huge, huge area of concern, of it can really, really impact how we feel about ourselves. So I wonder if you could share just a bit about that, if you're comfortable.
Yeah, I mean, but girls bullying are not so nice. It's definitely more mental than physical with girl bullying.
Like rules kind of thing in that way.
Similar, yes. Of course, that's way more dramatized, but I did get bullied a lot in grade school. And then thankfully, it got slightly less intense as I was making my way through middle and high school. I will say, once I moved out of my religious schools, it was a little bit better. Public school was a little bit more forgiving in my case and was able to find a group of people to hang around with. I do think that because I was bullied a lot growing up, it did make it harder to make friends. And I think I stayed in certain friendships that weren't really the best for me or serving me very well because I was just afraid to lose it because I had no friends before and I did not want to go back to that. But then once you start like to realize it, especially when I got into college, you know, I started realizing, okay, I'm going to outgrow some people. It's going to happen regardless. And, you know, have to learn from that. And I think just making friends and having friends is difficult in general. But the fact that I do have a little, I do have like the background of the bullying, it makes it harder to make friends and not have that little voice in your head thinking that, oh, they think you're weird, or they think that you're annoying, or, you know, you're too much or too little or whatever it is. It doesn't matter. You're making a perception of yourself from what you think they think. And if you, I started thinking about that, I'm like, I think they think this. That might not be what they think. So I'm making a fake version of myself.
Right. Well, we come up with our own narratives so often, which I think is a human thing to do. And so we start thinking about what other people think without really knowing what they are thinking. And again, having that curiosity and questioning that, I think is such a, it's such a positive way to look at it.
That, I think that's the crux of it all, is just how, like, can I just make it more positive? Because it's so easy to fall into a negative space. It's so easy just to be like, well, they don't like me. And just moving on from that, be like, no, they might not. They could have other stuff going on too. Like a big thing is like, I try to think, okay, well, they might be going through something, so they're just not talkative right now, or they're going through something, or they just didn't see me smile and wave at them, so they didn't see that, or they just don't feel like it, and that's okay. You can be indifferent towards somebody. It's not the end of the world.
Well, it's that saying, like, it's not always about us, right? That somehow we're always so worried about ourselves that really maybe somebody else is having a bad day. Or going through whatever they're going through.
Yeah, trying to just get outside of yourself, you know, it's hard. You know, you see everything through your own lens and your own perspective. I definitely try to like see things from other people's perspectives and try to understand, okay, well, what, like, and less of playing like a devil's advocate for myself and more so just saying like, okay, well, what's their side thinking maybe? And as long as I'm just confident in myself and feeling that I'm making good decisions for myself, it shouldn't matter what they're doing, as long as it's not, you know, impeding or hurting me in any way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Can you share just some strategies and things that you practically do to help reset, ground yourself, help stay positive?
Staying positive, again, always work in progress. definitely, especially when I get anxious, I try to distract myself on things, because sometimes I just get a wave of it and there's nothing. Sometimes there is a trigger, sometimes there's not. And when you just kind of, or at least when I get like a wave of anxiety, I just try to distract myself with other things, like, okay, I'm feeling nervous right now, but what can I do that's at least going to make me productive, give me some positivity, or just help me to not focus on something that I can't change right now?
You shift your mindset in that way.
Yeah. Like, you know, have one of my hobbies that I enjoy doing.
Fashion.
I love to draw. I love to embroider, which is a very actually like calming activity. Put an audiobook on and like you can help you forget what you were thinking about before. You know, I have my pet, which I think I definitely use my pets as like therapy animals.
They are absolutely therapy.
Yeah. Or, you know, just checking in with a friend, you know, which is also, you know, a double good thing. Cause you know I love it when people just check in with me and see how I'm doing. So it's, you know, I get to do that for them too, and it helps distract my mind. Same thing I do with family. It could also just be as simple as, okay, I'm feeling anxious right now, but I'm at work, so I'm just going to focus as hard as I can on work and try to ignore it best I can until it's something that I can change. I'll try and change and fix it later, or I can't change it, so I'm just going to do what I can right now.
I think you have given so many wonderful messages and ways to think about things that can really help so many people. We just have a minute or two, and I'm wondering if there's some message of hope, a last thought that you might have to offer my listeners who are in similar situations and have very similar challenges.
Yeah, I guess biggest takeaway, and also just for me, is, you know, be nicer to yourself and don't compare yourself to anybody. Just trying to stay as motivated as you can, but also stay compassionate, because you can't ignore your feelings, but you can do your best to be proactive rather than reactive when you're hit with stuff that you don't like.
I think those are all really wonderful things that people can take away, to remember to breathe. Also really important.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. That breath that we always have with us. And I just want to ask you if you journal, because journaling has saved my life in so many ways. And I just wanted to touch base with you on how you feel about that.
I do. I have a personal one, a dream one, and a gratitude one.
Oh, so you have three separate ones. That's awesome.
Yeah, I also just like having the journals. It's nice to just write things down. It helps me get it out of my brain, at least for a little bit, so I can say, it's over there, the energy's on the page, and I'm going to go over here now.
Great. That's great. Well, Kiana, I have really, really enjoyed talking with you. And you're a very inspiring and impressive young woman.
Thank you. Oh, it's so nice to actually talk through you, not just listen in as a third party.
Right. Well, I know you've been a very great supporter of mine and listening to my podcasts and sharing them. Thank you. And I feel like it's a really special treat for me to be able to talk with you.
Same here, Maureen. It's so nice meeting you too in person.
Yes. We actually haven't had a face-to-face. So this has been great.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you. Thank you for listening to My Secret Life with an Eating Disorder. If you enjoy this podcast, which I hope you did, I hope you share it with friends on whatever social media platforms you enjoy. And remember, trust yourself. Don't trust the mirror.
Thank you for listening to Don't Trust the Mirror, My Secret Life with an Eating Disorder, with psychoanalyst Maureen Kritzer-Lang, the queen of self-esteem. We hope you enjoyed it. Please visit donttrustthemirror.com, where you'll find all our social networking links and can post your stories, comments, and questions. Until next time, remember, trust yourself. Don't trust the mirror.